4. It may not seem worthwhile to describe the obviously inadequate reactions of a child to the Great War at such great length. That would certainly be true if mine were an isolated case, but it was not. This, more or less, was the way an entire generation of Germans experienced the war in childhood or adolescence, and one should note that this is precisely the generation that is today preparing its repetition. The force and influence of these experiences are not diminished by the fact that they were lived through by children or young boys. On the contrary, in its reactions, the mass psyche greatly resembles the child psyche. One cannot overstate the childishness of the ideas that feed and stir the masses. Real ideas must, as a rule, be simplified to the level of a child's understanding if they are to arouse the masses to historic actions. A childish illusion, fixed in the minds of all children born in a certain decade and hammered home for 4 years, can easily reappear as a deadly serious political ideology 20 years later. From 1914 to 1918, a generation of German schoolboys daily experienced war as a great, thrilling, enthralling game between nations, which provided far more excitement and emotional satisfaction than anything peace could offer. And that has now become the underlying vision of Nazism. That is where it draws its allure from, its simplicity, its appeal to the imagination, and its zest for action, but also its intolerance and its cruelty toward internal opponents. Anyone who does not join in the game is regarded not as an adversary but as a spoil sport. Ultimately, that is also the source of Nazism's belligerent attitude toward neighboring states. Other countries are not regarded as neighbors, but must be opponents, whether they like it or not. Otherwise, the match would have to be called off. Many things later bolstered Nazism and modified its character, but its roots lie here, in the experience of war, not by German soldiers at the front, but by German schoolboys at home. Indeed, the frontline generation has produced relatively few genuine Nazis and is better known for its critics and carpers. That is easy to understand. Men who have experienced the reality of war tend to view it differently. Granted, there are exceptions, the eternal warriors who found their vocation in war with all its terrors and continue to do so, and the eternal failures who welcome its horrors and its destruction as a revenge on a life that has proved too much for them. Goering, perhaps, belongs to the former type, Hitler certainly to the latter. The truly Nazi generation was formed by those born in the decade from 1900 to 1910, who experienced war as a great game and were untouched by its realities. Quite untouched? At least, you may protest, they suffered starvation. True enough, but hunger scarcely interfered with the game. It may even have enhanced it. Well-fed, satisfied men are not given to visions and imaginings. At any rate, hunger alone did not bring disillusion. It was, one could say, digested. Its final result has merely been a certain indifference to undernourishment, one of the more admirable traits of this generation. We were early accustomed to make do with a minimum of food. Most Germans alive today have lived through 3 periods of malnutrition, first during the Great War, then during the peak of the inflation in 1923, and now for the 3rd time under the slogan of "Guns before butter." The German people have been well trained in this respect, and are not very demanding. I think the widespread opinion that the Germans lost the war because of hunger is quite mistaken. By 1918 they had already gone hungry for 3 years, and food had been scarcer in 1917 than in 1918. In my opinion, the Germans abandoned their war effort not because they were starving, but because they thought the war militarily lost and politically without prospect. Be that as it may, the Germans will scarcely give up Nazism or a Second World War out of hunger. Today they consider hunger almost as a moral duty, and anyhow, it is not so hard to bear. They have become rather ashamed of their natural needs. Paradoxically, the Nazis have acquired a new, indirect propaganda weapon by giving the people too little to eat. Anyone who grumbles is alleged to be doing so because they cannot get butter or coffee. There is, of course, a great deal of grumbling in Germany, but most people complain for very different and generally far more honourable reasons than food shortages. They would be ashamed of complaining because of those. People grumble far less about the scarcity of food than one would assume from the Nazi newspapers, but these journals know perfectly well what they are doing when they imply the contrary. For rather than be thought to be complaining out of mere greed, most Germans prefer to suffer in silence. As I said above, that is one of their more likable traits.